I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, June 7th is runoff day for San Antonio city elections. Four seats on the council and the mayor's office are up for grabs. Texas Public Radio is hosting a series of head-to-head debates with the candidates. We kick off with San Antonio City Council District 1, and we're joined by incumbent councilmember Sukh Kaur and challenger Patty Gibbons. District 1 encompasses downtown San Antonio and adjacent neighborhoods, areas experiencing significant development and gentrification. Early voting for the runoff begins on May 27th and continues through June 3rd. The outcome will determine representation for a district central to San Antonio's economic and cultural landscape. Call in with a question for the candidates, 833-877-8255. Or email us at thesource@tpr.org. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. San Antonio's municipal runoff election is June 7th. There are four unresolved city council races and the mayor's race. TPR's The Source is hosting live on-air debates for all those races, and we're starting today with District 1. The candidates are incumbent Councilmember Sukh Kaur and challenger Patty Gibbons. District 1 encompasses downtown San Antonio and adjacent neighborhoods, areas experiencing significant development and gentrification. The objective of this hour is to have a civil exchange of ideas and solutions that help the listener voter understand which candidate would best represent their views and priorities on city council. The candidates are encouraged to talk about themselves and their own vision for San Antonio. Candidates who try to disparage the other candidate or characterize the opponent's positions will be redirected on air. That time will be cut, and the opponent will be given an opportunity to respond. We're taking calls from listeners. The calls are screened, and the callers are prompted to ask issue-focused questions that are available to be answered by both candidates. Our format, we have two-minute opening statements that we're going to go to question and answers. Candidates will have 2 minutes to respond, and the answers are timed, and if the candidate exceeds that time, a bell will ring. The candidate will alternate who goes first to answer. We'll switch back and forth. And then there is a one-minute closing statement. We flipped a coin earlier to establish who goes first with opening statements. That's going to be Patty Gibbons. But first, I do want to mention that Sukh Kaur is a former Texas Public Radio board member, and that status has no bearing on this broadcast or any of our coverage. So we're going to go ahead and get started. And our phone lines are open. If you got a question for the candidates, 833-877-8255. And let's go ahead and get started with opening statements. 2 minutes for Patty Gibbons.
Good afternoon. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to be here. I am a longtime resident in San Antonio. We moved here in 1982, so we've been here 43 years. And we came here to build our family and to build our life, and we did. It was very interesting because when we moved here, we had one daughter. We had some roadblocks along the way. My husband found out he had cancer, and that meant maybe not any more children. But when you have faith in God, you believe for the forward and the future, and we did. And four more children came by, and one more, so we ended up with six children. I'm a mother of two sets of twins, so to all our twin moms out there, hang in there, keep going. Then we started to build our house. We bought our first house and then bought our second house because our family grew very fast. And that's when we then got our license in land surveying, my husband did, and that changed everything. When you get licensed like that, it allows you the ability to really grow and do lots of things in your life. And that's what we did. So we grew, and then we built our own business in 1991, Gibbons Surveying and Mapping. And surveyed all kinds of properties throughout San Antonio, throughout Bexar County, and other counties beyond. It was a great eye view of what this city looks like for me. I ran for city council in 2017. I lived in District 9 at that time and didn't win that race. It was a race of 10. but I was appointed by John Courage to serve on the Zoning Commission, which I absolutely love because you really, again, get to not only see the neighborhoods, but you get a good feel of who the people are in the city. And they are hardworking. They play by the rules. They, too, are entrepreneurs. District 1 is 37% small mom-and-pop shops. And I really relate to that because it takes hard work, ingenuity, and a love and passion of what you do. And that's what I bring to City Council, is that love and passion.
All right, 2 minutes up. Now let's go to Sukh Kaur.
Good afternoon, listeners. Thank you so much for tuning in. It's been my absolute honor to serve as your councilwoman over the last 2 years. My team and I have learned so much, and there's so much work that we've been able to accomplish, but yet so much work to be done. There's three top priorities that we've been focusing on. First is infrastructure, making sure projects are done on budget and on time. The second is neighborhoods, making sure that we keep them safe and affordable for all of our residents. And the last is thriving parks and community centers. So first on construction, we were so proud to be able to pass a memorandum earlier this year to require SAWS, CPS, and the city to use subsurface utility engineering. That means knowing what's underground before we even start construction. But we still have work to do on creating a long-term sidewalk plan so that every resident in District 1 has access to a safe and walkable neighborhood. Second, on safe and affordable neighborhoods, we were able to create a District 1 streetlight fund to light up our streets where CPS may have said there's not a light necessary, but residents really felt like they wanted them. We created a fencing pilot with ACS to help our stray and loose dog population. But we still need to continue to create more affordable housing to ensure that our residents can afford to live in their homes and build supply of new affordable. And lastly, with thriving parks and community centers, we created funding for the Kenwood Community Center to be completely rebuilt, a community design team to support that, and San Pedro Springs Park. As the 10th most historic park in the country, we have to continue to revitalize it, bring people downtown to San Pedro Springs Park so that families can enjoy all of the beautiful amenities that are there. And we'll keep continuing to work hard in this next term for our District 1 residents.
All right, so let's go to our question and answer portion of our debate with our two candidates, Sukh Kaur and Patty Gibbons. They are the runoff candidates for District 1, and the election day is June 7th. And if you got a question for the candidates, you can call in 833-877-8255. And Sukh Kaur, you're going to be first with this, and you'll have 2 minutes to answer. Expectation is that San Antonio City Council, the San Antonio City budget, may have to be reduced due to the elimination of federal funding, anticipation of a contraction in the economy. So if budget cuts are necessary, how would you approach that?
This is a super important question as we head into this summer. Having experience with the last two budgets, it's been kind of a blessing that we've been able to add services to the areas that we really need it. But coming into a space where we might need to create budget cuts, I think it's really important that first we look at where we can create efficiencies in our departments. Where is work being overlapped that we can ensure that we can help reduce those costs in each of those areas? And I know city staff is already taking that into consideration. Second, we just received a budget update from an external consultant that's working on looking at different methods we can use to really track our outcomes. So I'm a big believer in performance-based budgeting and outcome-based budgeting. That means we're really tracking what are the outputs and the outcomes we want each of our departments to strive towards and ensuring our resources are focused there. So does that mean we can reduce cuts at ACS where we need more officers to address those critical calls? Absolutely not. We have to really focus on what are the outcomes that we want as priorities, and the budget survey is out right now, so we need all residents listening to provide your input, because that is how we decide what are the most important things that we need to focus on in this upcoming year, and we'll make sure to listen to community to prioritize those needs as we move forward.
All right, when we have 2 minutes for Patty Gibbons to give her answer, like what would happen if there is a budget shortfall and cuts are necessary with the city?
Well, this is a super question that should have been answered probably 4 budgets ago. We've been steadily getting more and more into debt, and debt means that's money that's not being used out in the community. The debt is very large. I think that had you started cutting and watching your spending in particular, then we wouldn't maybe be in the position we're in today. I hope that this doesn't mean the services that you and I depend on don't get cut. The fire, the police, ACS, our streets, and our sidewalks, because that's the first thing that comes to my mind is I'm now going to be relegated to the back of the line. My street's going to be lost again in the shuffle of all kinds of streets, in the shuffle of all kinds of money that has to go somewhere else. But in particular, you must pull back on those spendings of projects that you think are just so necessary but are really just your project, and start looking at the people and the bigger picture. And I don't think that we have a council that's been doing that in a very big way. I hope the next council that comes in is a servant leader council like I will be, so that we are listening, truly listening to what the needs are out there.
All right. And next question. This is from a listener. It's an email question from Anita. So what do you do to propose to address heat mitigation in San Antonio? As with man-made climate change, temperatures continue to rise. We're having another hot day today, another 100 degrees. They wonder about cool pavement installation, tree planting incentives, things that can be done to provide shade at bus routes. What do you think, so Patty Gibbons, what can be done to do heat adaptation in San Antonio?
Well, to address the bus routes, I thought when we passed the resolution for money to Forvia, that was exactly what we were going to get, was better bus depots, ones that were shaded, ones that maybe had more protection for those who sit waiting for the bus. I don't see that that's happening. When the arborists came on board back in 2015, maybe long ago, I thought that's what we were going to do, start planting more trees, start protecting trees. Here we want to take down Brackenridge trees, and we haven't planted trees. So we seem to be very behind the curve on that regard. Are we our own enemy, creating the heat islands that bring in a lot of heat, moisture, humidity into our inner city? We are. And I don't think we smartly think about that, because we're too absorbed with build. So if we want to really truly get to addressing climate issues in our urban core, then we have to make some tough building decisions.
All right. Now, Sue Kaur, what to do about heat adaptation for climate change?
Absolutely. So sustainability is going to be so critical, particularly since the federal government is probably going to be taking funds away from this in this upcoming year. A few things that are really important. First, as mentioned in the question, the cool pavement pilot. We tried that several years ago, and we've been putting funding towards that. Yes, that asphalt is more expensive, but we need to double down on that, because it does make an impact in terms of how much heat is radiating from that pavement. Second, as mentioned, the tree mitigation fund. We do have a pretty large tree mitigation fund, but there's so many barriers that come up in terms of adding sprinkler systems, who's going to actually do the installation. So we have to figure out how to better leverage that fund as we go into this upcoming year. And then the last thing, the sustainability department at the city has been working on a very innovative idea called community resiliency hubs. The best ideas for sustainability and resiliency comes from our community. And so the Office of Sustainability provided grants across the city as community action grants to help people think of solutions, whether it was gardens, food gardens that they wanted to create in their neighborhoods, tree canopies that they were focusing on, and solutions that really the neighbors came up with together. And so this fund lasted over the last couple years. They're producing a report in June that will show what are the strategies that were most successful. And so we need to take a look at this report and see where there was the most amount of success based on outcomes, and then double down on those strategies.
All right, our phone lines are open. If you've got a question for our two candidates for City Council District 1, they are in the June 7th runoff, Sue Kaur and Patty Gibbons. You can call in. The number is 833-877-8255. You can also email us at thesource@tpr.org. Early voting for the runoff begins on Tuesday, May 27th, continues through June 3rd, with Election Day on June 7th. Tomorrow, we will be having the candidates for District 6. Monday, we're going to be joined by the candidates for mayor, Gina Ortiz-Jones and Rolando Pablos. And on Tuesday, May 27th, we have the candidates. Wednesday, May 28th, we're going to be focusing on District 9. So let's go back to the questions. And again, this is going to go to Sue Kaur to have her first response. It's a question from Luis. He says, San Antonio is an arts city. Can the candidates expand on what is her understanding about how arts funding in San Antonio works, which are her understanding of the impact of investing in the arts has on our community? And if we enter into a budget crunch in San Antonio, will arts be cut? And so, Sue Kaur, you have 2 minutes.
As a huge advocate for the arts, I would never allow the budget for the arts department to be cut. There are several ways where our arts can get funding in the city. When I was an educator, there was a big push to have, you know, a focus on science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. And the last several years, you've noticed that STEM push has become STEAM. Science, technology, arts. Science, technology, engineering, arts, and mathematics. You can't leave out the arts in STEAM. And so as a focus on making sure that both sides of the brains are being connected, we have to double down on one, all of our providers that are doing so much for the community. The San Pedro Playhouse has been a huge asset that's going to be going up for bond funding. So bond funding is one of the ways that we can provide funding for the arts. And we need to make sure that all of our city buildings, whether it's the Playhouse or the Magic Theater, get the right amount of supports that they need. In addition, we have a lot of other art museums that are actually established, and most of them exist in District 1, whether it's the Duseum, the San Antonio Museum of Art, and we need to help continue to create more accessibility for all. So Tuesdays, they do days where you can come and join in some of those activities for free, and we need to help create a bigger diaspora of folks that actually access those museums and resources for our community. And then lastly, the other source of funding that the city directly controls is the arts department. And the arts department is responsible for public art. They're responsible for the maintenance of it. And there's a lot of good that we can do with public art because it adds to the vibrancy of our city. But there are a lot of other subsidiary organizations that are doing that work too. With Centro, Visit SA, who receives some of the hot tax funding, we need to continue to partner together with our nonprofit organizations to support that. And I was honored to just have funded a new mural at Delview Park that's going to be painted by artist Nick Monroe through District 1 funds and the Arts Commission.
All right. Now we have 2 minutes for the response from Patty Gibbons. What is your commitment to funding the arts in San Antonio, particularly if there is a budget shortfall?
Well, I think you have to engage the community into our arts. I was surprised when I moved here from Ohio, the lack of art, the lack of art museums, the lack of ballet, the lack of symphony, the culture that that brings. It inspires, it moves people, it gives you the passion that you're looking for. And I don't think we're using the arts in the way that it could be better used, so that it brings people into a space that in some ways sort of takes them away. You want to go to an art museum to experience something, and you want to go to a symphony or a ballet to experience things. I do think one of the arts that we do have in our city is music. I think we're a very music-oriented community, everything from rock to Tejano to country. We have them all. We have these wonderful venues, the Majestic, the Charlene McCombs, the Aztec is fabulous places. And those are arts in themselves. And I think we could probably do some inspiration of spurring art beyond by using music so that you're bringing the community into the culture that you want to create. But I don't think San Antonio's done a good job of creating an art culture. We do take money from the bond, 10% or I think it is, that off of every project, and we plant a steel twisted pole in the ground and call that art. And I don't think people are looking at that and saying that doesn't inspire me at all. So we probably need to do a better job of making sure the art is moving people in a direction that you want them to be moved in, and that is to take ownership of their city and ownership of District 1.
All right, let's go to a caller. And if you want to call in with your question for the candidates, we'd love to hear from you. The number is 833-877-8255. We do ask that the questions, you don't give a speech. You're just going to ask a question. It's a question that's available to both of the candidates to answer. And let's go to Ashley on the phones. And Ashley, the question will first be answered by Patty Gibbons. And go ahead, Ashley, with your question.
Yeah, you guys touched really briefly on climate adaptation. And one of the most important things for climate adaptation is increasing density and walkability. So I just wanted to know what you guys would do to continue to increase density in D1 and how we can make our neighborhoods more walkable. Thanks.
All right. Thank you for that question, Ashley. So, Patty Gibbons, you have 2 minutes to talk about adaptivity for the higher temperatures with walkability.
Well, see, I would say that your density is what's creating your higher temperature. You live in a dense city. I believe the inner part of District 1, you're about 4,400 square feet, has 4,400 people per square feet. If you go out to the outer edge of the northern side of District 1, you're at 22. So the density is what's going to create that heat. So you're not going to go outside. So how are you going to be walkable if the heat just went from 100 to 107 outside? So the density can be an issue. You want the density or do you want the walkability? Sometimes the two aren't necessarily going to mix. I do think the walkability of 15-minute cities where you have more suburban neighborhoods like Greater Harmony Hills, where we have the mixed use of condos to apartments to housing, and then you have the commerce around it, which is your HEB and your retail centers, those are walkable areas. So I don't know if we're creating the best walkability situation when it becomes a dense situation.
All right, 2 minutes for walkability with heat adaptation. Sukh Kaur.
I've been one of the biggest advocates for the transit-oriented development framework that we were able to pass as a city council in December. And this was such an important framework because it allows for the ability to create mixed-use developments up and down the Green Line that's going to add a multimodal transportation aspect to our community. And this is important because we took a lot of community neighborhood input in consideration when we actually pushed this policy forward. That means that the development has to fit in concert with what the neighborhood already has there. There are setback rules, there's historic overlay rules, but most importantly, allows for mixed use development. So you could have retail, you could have that plaza style walkable field with additional tree canopies and bike lanes for folks to use bikes as we need. We just passed our huge bike network plan finally after many years. So it has to be a combination of this policy, but then also incentivizing people to build in that area through the Housing Trust, for example. I'm on the board of the Housing Trust, and we want to encourage folks to build affordable housing because this beautiful plaza walkable style should not be accessible just to people paying market rate rents. And we want to be able to create that for all of our residents. So I think doubling down on helping people develop around our transit-oriented development framework, providing additional funding and incentives for affordable housing there, and making sure we're creating and supplementing that with bike lanes, with great sidewalks for people to walk on, and tree canopies to help create that shade, will truly address your question.
All right, so let me follow up on that in a way by asking you about the Green Line that's being proposed for Via Metro. That would be definitely going through District 1. Do you support the Green Line in this type of metro, mass transit? How would this change District 1? 2 minutes for Sukh Kaur.
I absolutely support the Green Line. Public transit is so important for all of our residents, and this is going to be our first opportunity to truly create mass transit for folks that can be able to get from the airport all the way downtown in a frequent, more quick service that we know that we need. It's important that we do this construction right. The voters actually voted to support the Green Line in a great way, so we know that there is support out there. But we have to make sure we do the construction right because there is going to be changes in traffic patterns on the street that our neighbors are going to have to face. And there is going to be some construction hurdles that we have to get through, but we cannot let what happened on St. Mary's and Broadway be repeated again. And so we'll make sure that we are addressing our community's needs. And I'm actually working with one of the other candidates to meet with who ran in this race, to meet with VIA to create a citizen advisory board so that we can get real input from the community as construction is going on to ensure that communication is great with neighborhoods, to ensure that folks know what is changing and when it's happening, and also to provide input on traffic calming through the neighborhoods, because that's the biggest concern that we've heard is people are going to divert through. So let's create solutions like either curb outs, additional stop signs, or speed bumps even to help prevent that from occurring.
All right, let's go to Patty Gibbons, the challenger for the District 1 council runoff. And where are you on support for the Green Line? How do you see if it moving forward?
No voter understood the Green Line. No voter, it was not on the it wasn't on the, for you to vote, you knew nothing about it. In fact, you probably still don't know much about it. There is an existing line already. That bus line goes down San Pedro, it stops, it goes, it stops, it goes. There's already communities there. There's already walkability there. I all I hear is my street and your neighborhood are going down to the bottom of the list again on getting street repair and nice and pretty sidewalks and a plaza-looking area. That just got bumped off the list because now we're all focused with a lot of money on the bus line going down San Pedro when it already does that. But the track record of VIA is not very good. They already built a very large parking deck over at Stone Oak and 281, never used. So now they decide to come over this way, and what are they going to do? Tear up our streets, tear up our lives, and tear up probably your investment of the house on all those neighborhoods starting at North Star going down the Green Line. So I'm not in favor of the Green Line. She never gave neighborhoods the opportunity to vent and never listened to how we felt about it. Now she wants to come up with a community sit down and let's chat and walk it through. When I don't think she listened before the first time, I don't think she'll listen the second time. So you as a voter were misled. You were never told the facts, the details. And I think going forward, that will always be the case on these big projects coming up, because somebody just wants to build just to build, not to build your life in a better way.
All right. So this is news to me that the Green Line is somehow controversial and destructive. And so I'd like to give you another 2 minutes, Patty Gibbons, to explain to me how it's going to destroy lives, lower property values. Explain to me what's the problem with the Green Line, and help me understand this.
Because the Green Line will now occupy more lanes solely for the bus line. So it will take away lanes on that are existing. It will take away the middle lane as well, because that's where you'll load the bus. They're going to have some nice fancy buses where the platform lowers and you can get on the bus a little bit quicker. There's nothing wrong with the bus right now. And they're hoping then, in order to, they don't have the ridership to pay for it. There's no money to pay for this unless you, the taxpayer, pay for it. So they're hoping that in order to get the ridership up, they'll bring the ridership to the bus line. So that means that everywhere along that Green Line, that TOD, Transit Oriented Development Overlay, which was a zoning overlay, will now allow builders to come in without any restrictive covenants or restrictive on setbacks or restrictive on even parking. They don't even have to provide parking if they build a six-story apartment complex to put the ridership in there. So you're going to be forced to get on that bus because there aren't going to be roads and there aren't going to be parking. So now the parking goes into the inner streets of where you live. So parking will be outside your door. And this was said over and over and over to planning, to zoning, to Secor. And it was never really addressed. In fact, it was taken off the table. So now the parking is not required. So that's going to disrupt your life in your neighborhood. Your neighborhood is not going to be the same. It's going to be very crowded. The density just crawled all the way up San Pedro to 410, and you're going to have to figure out how to live with that. I don't think that was ever discussed. It never will be. And now she wants to come up with a committee. Bravo to that, but I don't think we're going to see much results.
All right. So let's go to Secor and get your response to what the Green Line is, what it does, how this will, you know, what it proposes to do, and what are these concerns?
The Green Line is a rapid transit form of transportation that will allow all of our residents, regardless of what income level that they have, to be able to access their job, their work, their school in a more efficient way. San Antonio has long been behind the eight ball on public transit, and we needed to double down, which is why so many residents voted to support this. What it's going to allow for is more frequent bus transportation from the airport all the way on San Pedro through downtown. So you'll be able to quickly get to where you need to get to without having to wait for 45 minutes for the next bus. In addition, we'll get infrastructure improvements. So every light is going to be improved to allow for a quicker efficiency, including one of the most congested ones right now, which is Hildebrand and San Pedro. There will be a middle bus lane from 410 all the way down to Bassey, because that's where there are such widespread use lanes on San Pedro. And then the bus will go over to the right lane. And what's so great about this is we will still be able to use public transit and, you know, some of the points that were just made, I think are great to encourage people to use public transit would be not only a benefit for the community, but sustainability. Now we're talking about how do we actually reduce cars on the roads. That's a plus for all. And it's a plus for all residents, particularly in District 1, where so many folks are renting, so many folks still live below the poverty line in San Antonio. This is for them. It's for all of our residents to be able to access opportunity. And that is what I stand for.
All right, let's go back to the phones. And if you have a question for the candidates, we'd love to hear from you. 833-877-8255. And we have Ann, and Sue Kaur will be first to answer your question. And go ahead, Ann.
Okay. May I make one comment on what they just talked about on the Green Line?
If just you have a question, comment. Just ask your question.
Well, the one comment is that I feel like the city is forcing us to, they're assuming we're going to use the public transportation, and not everyone does. And
I feel like is that your question? Who's going to use the Green Line?
My question is how to make, how are they planning on making our community safer?
Okay. So, Sue Kaur, can you answer the question from Ann about her concerns about ridership and making the community safer?
Absolutely. So I'm going to address the second part of that question first. So community safety is really important, and we've tackled it through several different ways. First is creating a District 1 streetlight fund. A big issue in some of our neighborhoods is that they feel very dark in the evenings, and it's very hard to feel safe as you're walking. So we were able to fund over 52 streetlights in District 1 that are going to be installed in the next several months. In addition, a big public safety issue that we have is our stray and loose dog population. So we've increased the number of critical calls that are being addressed and created a fencing pilot to help folks that whose dogs are getting out to keep them in their home and educate folks on the importance of spay and neuter. And we just opened a new free spay and neuter clinic in partnership with District 5 and District 7 that we're excited about. And we need to continue doubling down on ACS. And then lastly, we need our officers to be addressing our critical calls. And for this reason, we just pushed a policy forward to help create retired police officers to come in and address some of those small minor calls like traffic accidents or parking enforcement to help increase the response rate on those while at the same time keeping our SAPD officers on the ground working on our most critical calls. So keeping neighborhoods safe is a huge priority of ours, and we'll keep advocating for that. And to increase ridership, it's again increasing frequency and making sure we're offering easy, accessible ways to public transit.
All right, and now let's get a response about public safety concerns, about what are some solutions, and concerns about ridership. Let's go to Patty Gibbons.
Well, again, VIA doesn't have the ridership. It doesn't exist there. So it's build it and they will come type of a dream. And we see that all the time in San Antonio. It's a poor way of planning, but it seems to continually to repeat itself. And now they've got a really good champion who will champion that voice in the councilwoman, apparently. I'd like to have a safe neighborhood, too. When the Trinidad de Agua was invaded the Palacio Apartments, 300 units they broke into. They defecated, they sex trafficking, all kinds of horrible things were happening at that apartment. And where was my councilwoman? When I reached out to ask, what's your statement? Because they were raided, they did find take some of them away. Some of them were Trinidad de Agua. I heard nothing back. So one of the things as a councilwoman, you're a representative, and I represent you on the dais and to ACS, all of these departments. I represent you, but I also have to be present. I need to be present where you are and present in your neighborhood association meetings, present in your issues that are happening so that I know how that feels. And I do know how that feels. I did not like an immigrant center that was 2 miles down the road and strangers constantly walking my neighborhood. As a neighborhood association president, it was a constant fear in the neighborhood. And never was there a presence or a present of my city councilwoman at our meetings to help us navigate through that. So all of this is nice talk, but I believe it will all go away after this election.
All right. And so can I get your response to that, Sue Kaur? Did we already went through you? Okay. So let's go to the next question. And Patty Gibbons, you're going to be going first. So let's talk about one of the issues that does separate y'all to, and that would be a reproductive justice fund, and whether or not the city should be putting dollars into this area. And Patty Gibbons, if you could go first with 2 minutes to talk about the reproductive justice fund.
Well, it wasn't $100,000 for a reproductive fund. It was more than that because now it's in litigation. And she was warned about that. And all the other councilwomen that are people that voted were warned it was going to go into litigation. And now it's going to cost us a lot of money. So here we are at the precipice of we must cut, we must watch our spending, but we're not. We're going to go ahead with our pet projects, with our agenda, with our ideologies, and go ahead and get those out there into the community. I think maybe it was just a matter of just saying it was getting it out there. It didn't matter how much it was going to cost you. But the taxpayers are looking at their streets and their sidewalks, and they're saying, when? District 1 has long been overdue, and here we are kicking the can down the road every time they use money for these type of projects. I'm a mother of 6 children. I loved my children. I wanted all of my children. And I would hope that for anyone that has that situation, I hope that they would want to keep their children too. Life is what breeds life. Life is what builds a community. And that's what I have done. So I'm not for a reproductive fund. I'm not for spending money in that capacity. That is not the role of city government. That's not the role of your tax dollars. We're to be fiduciarily responsible. You worked very hard and you play by the rules. And I intend to watch over that money very carefully.
All right. 2 minutes for Sukor to talk about the reproductive justice fund that was voted on by the city council. You support it?
I absolutely supported it wholeheartedly. The role of city council is to ensure that every single one of our residents has access to a safe and healthy life. If you look at the residents and the women who have been most disenfranchised by this horrific policy that the state has passed, is our low-income women of color. Because quite frankly, the several friends that I have had that needed to get services are able to get on a flight and fly to another state and receive those services. But those that are not are the ones that are dying from sepsis. Those that are the ones that are not able to get the care that they need and having to potentially carry a stillborn baby till term. That is absolutely ridiculous, and it is our job to make sure that every single one of our residents has access to health care and health care that will keep them safe and healthy. And that is why I supported this wholeheartedly, because that $100,000, if we think about how many lives that could save, is very important to fund. And it was not, and at the same time, we were able to get it passed and through before any legislation at the state was passed that it was against. So when we passed it, it was absolutely acceptable by state law.
All right, I have a question from a listener in an email, wants to know what additional civic engagement opportunities do you support for city council and the city manager for planning for San Antonio residents to provide input and have their questions answered in Sukakor?
This is so important, and I think that's what we've really tried to focus on, is how do we get folks engaged in the non-traditional ways, not just showing up to a meeting, because a lot of folks can't actually do that. So we have to get creative. One of the things we've been focusing on is creating a CRM for the city. Right now, there's no way to have two-way communication outside of SA Speak Up. So we need to create a platform where folks can sign up to provide input on certain areas and receive information back. And that is a project that we have been working on for the last year and will continue focusing on. In addition, there's one big area where that's coming up right now, and that's with Project Marvel. And so we just got a community engagement plan release that's going to allow for two-day charrettes over across the city, and particularly one in District 1, where we can ask for input on specific topics that includes design sessions, that includes providing real feedback to make sure that the citizen's voice is heard. And we have to diversify that. So right now, what we've done over the last couple of years is try to door knock, try to use social media, but we need to create more formalized ways for folks to really engage rather than the non-traditional formats that we've used. And we saw that when issues came up, like for example with the horse carriage survey, there was a huge amount of response because residents really wanted to provide their input. So we have to continue to make sure we are exploring opportunities for community engagement that are not using the traditional formats of civic engagement at the local government.
All right, and let's go to Patty Gibbons to talk about what can be done to increase engagement and allow citizens to ask questions to the city council members and the city manager.
Well, I served as a neighborhood association president for 6 years. for Greater Harmony Hills. And it's most important to engage them by meeting with them. And when you have a neighborhood association meeting, you want your city council person there. You want them there at the beginning to know you, talk to you, engage with you. You want them there during the program to learn about what's happening it specific to your neighborhood. And you want them there afterwards so you can ask questions specific. That doesn't happen under this councilwoman. She's late and she leaves early. I've seen it for myself in my own meetings. So the meetings are critical to me. What is super important is that you do allow that open dialogue to happen. I have seen that the city has really changed a lot into going to these surveys a lot. And the problem with a survey is you have a very large district, 143,000 voters. And then you have a survey and only 43 people respond, but that seems like enough for you. So you go ahead because all you needed to do is check the box off that somebody answered the survey. You already knew what you wanted to do. So you're only just getting the information out afterwards. The Marvel program has been out there since I saw it in December. I don't think anyone else has seen this program at all in District 1. She has not circulated it. She's not brought it up in her newsletters. She's not come to Neighborhoods Association meeting to even tell you about it. So we're all still in the dark until she decides what needs to be said, and then she'll go out there and circulate this. So this is all stuff that's regurgitated after it's decided
so
on how it's going.
So you're making the accusations about what she has done and what she has said. So I want to get her
I think they're real not accusations.
Well, let's just find out. So we got to invoke the rule here about just talking about yourself and your own view, and you're making accusations to
you
Sue
asked me
Kaur.
A question about what it
well,
was.
Well, I know, but now I'm asking you, I asked you about what you can do for civic engagement, not asking you about what
you
Sue Kaur does about for civic engagement. And so now I'm going to ask her to give her an opportunity to respond. Is that true? You have not put that in your newsletter. You've not gone to the neighborhood associations. You've not been discussing this with your voters.
I hope that the 6,000 voters that were able to vote for me in this first May election know that the engagement.
So it's really just ask, is that true? Have you not brought this up with your constituents?
No.
Okay. All right. So then let's just move on. So let's talk about what's happening with homelessness in the area in San Antonio. We're seeing an increase, and it's probably going to go up because the federal government is going to be cutting rent subsidies and other housing programs. So, Patty Gibbons, what are your concerns about what can be done to address homelessness in our area?
Well, homelessness is bad government policies. We have to go back and look at the policies and how they are affecting people's lives. If we continue to build our bureaucracy one after the other, we've grown our city government quite large that it is oppressive on people, that now it almost shuts people down. I have to pay for this. I have to have this license. I can't go here unless I do this. These are oppressive actions on people's lives. So you need to pull government back. It should be smaller, not larger. Now I'm not a government person. I'm a personal responsibility person. You can run your life and do a very good job at it. You can drive your car wherever you want and do a very good job at being responsible. Being responsible has its own amenities to it, and it can enhance all kinds of lives. Homelessness is so layered. You will have people who recently got out of prison, and now they have nowhere to go. You have people who have drug addiction. We haven't even talked about drug addiction in San Antonio and the amount of fentanyl that comes over the border. We are talking about people who may have mental health issues and don't have the ability to fix it or take their medication on a regular basis. But we do have a labyrinth of services that talks to each other and knows who's out there on the street so that they can meet the needs maybe immediately and some long term. I think it's important that the city council district and city council woman stays involved with that and make sure that those needs are met by whatever the city is or whatever the community is or whatever the churches are, so that we really can tackle these on a greater level. But it's a very difficult thing. It's layered with all kinds of reasons why people are homeless. To just lump them all, one, is not doing a good service on the issue.
All right, Sukakor, we're expecting more homelessness in the area due to government cuts from the federal government, especially the rent subsidies will be going away. What can be done to address the population that is unhoused?
This is a short-term and a long-term plan that needs to occur and needs to continue. We've already started implementing components of it. The first in the short term is expanding our street outreach team. Corazon Ministries does an amazing job of this, but there's also city street outreach staff that we were able to go walk communities of unhoused folks with to build relationships, because someone isn't just going to want to come off the street if they don't trust that you're actually there to help them. And so building that relationship, providing them the supports that they need, whether it's access to a license, mental health supports, and maybe even just a therapy to be able to get off the drugs that they're on, whatever that support is, we need to be able to help provide that. And that's what we need to double down on our street outreach team for. But at the same time, when someone is ready for that housing and ready to get off the street, we have to be able to have housing available. So the long-term solution is permanent supportive housing. And we've seen some really great examples of this in our community. Town Twin Village is a perfect example. Permanent supportive housing means that you get all the things that you need where you are living, and that there's no cutoff for when you have to go. And so you can get your food pantry help. You can get mental health counseling. You can get a neighborhood and a community that's really there to help support you and make sure that you can get a thriving life as well. And so we have to continue to fund both of those. There's several ways that we can do that, even when the federal government is taking away funding, but we can't let that fall by the wayside.
All right. And so also we mentioned Project Marvel, but I want to just really try to zero in on where the candidates are on support for Project Marvel, or conditions that they have for support. Or Project Marvel is a really vast thing. It's not just a Spurs arena. It's also the expansion of the convention center, trying also to improvements to the Alamo Dome. There's a lot of components here. But so, Sukakor, if you could talk about what is Project Marvel, how do you support it? Why is this a good thing for San Antonio, particularly when we have so many needs?
As a Marvel nerd, when this project first was released, I said, with great power comes great responsibility. And that's absolutely what we have here, is we have the opportunity to really enhance our convention center, to create a land bridge connecting the east side to downtown, to upgrade our Alamo Dome, and potentially even bringing another music venue in the Spurs downtown. But in order to do this, there are so many things we have to get right before that even happens. There's a misnomer that Project Marvel has already decided on, it's already been voted. That is not true. We are getting into the community engagement phase now. Like I mentioned earlier, super excited to partner with Able City, and they're going to be doing two-day charrettes, community design sessions, actually listening on what does the community want around urban planning? Where can we create more affordable housing? What is the potential for economic development? And most importantly, what is the community benefits agreement that's going to come out of Marvel? If you got a chance to come downtown during Final Four, there was residents from all over the city that were accessing the free viewings of the games, the free activations, the free music. There was so much built in, and we have to be able to replicate that. And that presentation is going to come to Council in July. And so that's going to make, but we will not take any votes or any action before we hear that presentation. And one of the biggest components of that is going to be funding, because that's where the rubber hits the road. We've got to make sure that no individual property tax dollars are being rerouted to go to Marvel, and that we're being really conscientious of how we support financially.
All right. And Patty Gibbons, can you talk about what are your thoughts on Project Marvel? Do you support it? Under what conditions? What would this do for San Antonio when we have so many needs?
Well, I love a Spurs game. I loved it when we won our first games back in when David Robertson was signed on. It was an exciting time. They bring an excitement. They bring a spirit to our city. And I think that I'd like to make sure that we maintain that. It's all about what we're going to build, the money we're going to spend, the projects that aren't going to get done in your neighborhood. That's what people hear right now. But I want to hear the spirit of what the Spurs does to us as a city. I'd like to hear more of that. I don't know what the charrettes are going to do for 2 days, because when we have planning sessions with the planning department, they're almost 2 years long. So two charrettes for 2 hours isn't going to do anything. It tells me again that things are already planned and put in place, and it's just a matter of telling you the direction that they want it to go. The taxes are going to be there. They're going to have to bond it, do tours. The taxes are going to happen. And the citizens didn't get that opportunity to vote on that. They did get to vote on the Green Line, but they don't get to vote on the amount of money here. And we are very heavy in debt. So it's difficult to even talk about this because of the money behind it. And I guess if I throw really fun words at it, this is going to be super fun. And it was a lot of excitement and there's all kinds of energy that maybe the pain of my money leaving my pocket will help. I don't think it will. And again, District 1 just got the can kicked down the road on your streets, your roads, and your sidewalks.
So you're a no on Project Marvel, Patty Gibbons?
How can any of us say yes or no when she says that we haven't even seen the charrette, we haven't participated in anything yet? So what I know about it, I'm going to say no because of the money. And most people are going to say no as well. So somebody's got to come up with a better plan to lift my spirits to say that this is going to be a great deal before you take money out of my pocket.
And really, really, really quickly, do I say you're yes, Shukakor, on Project Marvel? Yes, with conditions?
Yes, with conditions.
When, what's the number one condition?
The community benefits agreement that comes out.
All right, okay.
So we didn't even know what that is, so that's new.
Well, I guess that's in development as well. So we're going to our closing statements, and each candidate will get a 1 minute able to wrap it up and make close the sale with the voters. And so, Patty Gibbons, you have 1 minute to give your closing statement.
You know, thank you for letting me speak today. I feel like I'm speaking on behalf of a lot of people. There were 52% of the people did not vote in favor of this current councilwoman. It's very unusual that an incumbent does not win. So they're still out there saying, I don't think I can go this far again. So they want some change, but they want a common sense change. My money matters to me. I work very hard for it. I play by the rules. And yet, now somebody has come before me again to ask for the money and I won't get my projects done. So I'm here to help District 1 get projects done. I have 4 years to stay focused. This is not a career change that I'm doing. I'm not looking to jump off of it to go somewhere else in life. I'm here to publicly serve and publicly serve the neighborhoods that need the protection that they're looking for when the big projects come down the road.
All right, and now we have 1 minute for the closing statement for Shukakor.
This premise of the conversation today is, what is our vision for District 1? And I truly have a vision for District 1 that includes both preserving the character and the culture of our neighborhoods that has made District 1 the corazón of San Antonio, but also allowing for accessibility and all of our residents to be able to afford to live in the district, use public transit, visit our amazing amenities downtown so that we can truly have a thriving community. Because we know that a thriving San Antonio does not include representation just for a small portion of our neighborhoods, but for all of our residents. And I commit to being that council person, the one that's going to continue to be available for you. I give my cell phone out to everyone. I'll even give it on air right now, 210-236-0580. Call me if you have any questions, concerns. I will be here for you. I will continue working hard to get the job done. Thank you for listening.
All right. And this has been a special source debate or a runoff debate with the candidates for District 1, incumbent Shukakor and challenger Patty Gibbons. Early voting for the runoff begins on Tuesday, May 27th. We'll continue through June 3rd with Election Day on June 7th. Tomorrow, we will have the candidates for District 6, Rick Galvan, Kellyanne Gonzalez. Monday, we're going to have the candidates for mayor, Gina Ortiz-Jones and Rolando Pablos. And on Tuesday and Wednesday, we'll have the other council district runoff races. This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thank you for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation. Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp carrier dedicated to handling claims proactively and a commitment to helping injured employees and workers' comp policyholders get back to business. TexasMutual.com/claims.